Oh, thank you, Kenneth. Thank you so much for such a warm introduction. Very, very nice. Thank you so much. So,
oh, you're welcome. This is a rich and wonderful experience that we're going to have with you, opening this door to understanding, because you've had a very interesting path, and then you've put that into this book. And so help us to know a little bit more about what made you decide to write Sweet Reverence.
Well, as you had mentioned a little bit earlier, I had a very transformative experience in January of 1998. I had a spiritual awakening in which the veil was raised, and I was immediately aware that we are not first human beings. We are first and foremost spiritual beings. And through the experience, my kundalini was released, and Stanislav Grof, MD, PhD, a well-known psychiatrist for more than 50 years, has experience researching the healing and transformative potential of non-ordinary states.
Mm.
And he would, yeah, he's really quite an interesting fellow.
Yeah.
And he would say that the experience that I had, which many others have experienced too, would have been called a spiritual emergency.
Wow.
It was a very sudden experience, one that I had not anticipated to come to me. And fortunately, with my metaphysical background that I had, I was able to maneuver through it. Yeah, I think many people would have been wondering just exactly what happened to them. So,
yeah, ooh, my goodness. So there, talk about a special day. That's a one to mark on your calendar in January of 1998.
Yeah, it most definitely was. It was an experience where I was impulsed to remember who I am. And really, in that experience, it isn't just who I am. All beings are first spiritual beings. That's the way I see it, experience it, and believe it, that we are spiritual beings in the human body. And through this experience that I had, I had a very warming, expansive feeling taking place in my heart center area. And it continued to expand with so much love that I began to remember where that love originated, and in that origination is the spirit. So it was a very powerful experience.
Wow. They definitely. Now I'm curious, because for us, most of us on the planet, the thought of death or people dying, well, there's a lot of that going on.
Mm-hmm.
The ego is in there kind of going, no, I want to live forever.
Exactly.
And so your book, Spiritual, the Sweet Reverence book that you wrote, I'm wondering, how can that help us alleviate some of our fears around death and dying?
Well, and I'm really glad you're asking. There's some really important components that I strongly believe in that can help alleviate fear around the death and dying process. And one of those is closure, and with the element of forgiveness. For me, I see that it's really important that if at all possible, family and friends, the circle of loved ones around the family member that is dying, that if they can come together and finish any kind of unfinished business, this can really help to ease any grief that will occur, and it just makes the process much more peaceful, also relieving some of the suffering that is attached with the unfinished business.
Mm.
Yeah, and then another element that I find really important is compassionate listening. And ideally, for someone to have someone there that can be as a compassionate witness. So perhaps combining those two together, compassionate witness with really good compassionate listening skills, allows everyone within this circle to come to this place of closure in a more peaceful way.
Mm, okay. Wow. And this is part of what we would help get some support to learn to be more compassionate listeners by getting your book, Sweet Reverence?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, you're not going to, you wouldn't tell us how to get the book, would you?
No, let's see. yeah, Amazon. Is the best way to go about getting it, or directly from the publisher, which is ETC Publishing, which is etcpublishing.com. So
Okay. Either
one is a good way to go about getting the book.
And all right, and then you'll be, I guess, in time offering it. I understand you're doing some upgrading to your website.
Right, I am. So right now it's under construction. So the best place is to go is to Amazon and ETC Publishing, both of those. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good. And
yeah.
Will they link people back to your website, reverencebreath.com?
ETC Publishing can offer that. I don't believe Amazon does, though.
Okay. So then
yeah.
I want listeners to make a note of your website, because beyond the book, you have other resources you'll be offering.
I will, yeah.
And that website is www.reverence, spelled reverencebreath.com.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, well, this is good.
Yeah.
Good. Okay, so anyway, so you were giving us the importance of compassionate living. We can find that, some support in that. And is there more?
Yeah, one of the things, too, around this, the compassionate witnessing, that can take different forms, such as a hospice volunteer or clergy, chaplain, social worker, a therapist, and some people are starting to do something like a doula. Usually a doula is considered at the birth of a child, but there are the beginnings of doulas with the dying, and so those kinds of compassionate witness or type of person really works well to help facilitate closure.
Mm.
Yeah. And
Okay. Yeah. So when someone is born, it's more obvious that they're coming out of a womb we can see in physical form. And when they're passing on, they're returning in a way I know this is probably not a term you've used, but I want to throw it out there, a spiritual womb of going back into the presence of God. And people have talked about the light and going back to the light and a tunnel. And I was thinking, come in through a tunnel, go back through a tunnel. My goodness.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I like your spiritual womb idea. That fits right in. With what I'm talking about, and the idea of birthing, and the way I see it is birthing back home, the actual moving through the tunnel, back to the light of our spiritual home. So that's another part of what Sweet Reverence offers to the readers, that my spiritual belief and experience that life does continue, and the hope of what awaits us as we release from our body and return home.
Mm. Wow. Yes. And what we're hearing from people like yourself and one of your mentors, Danyon Brinkley, is that going home is actually a good thing.
Yes, it's actually a very good thing. We release from our body and we are in complete love and peace and joy, and that's a message that I definitely really need and want to get across to people, that death is not at all the final chapter. It's a returning back to our origin?
Well, if I can kind of tangentially, as we're talking, something is coming to mind that I don't know if I could ask you to help address. One of the areas is that this talk, you know, going to this loving place, from some religious perspectives, a person here on earth, to be able to reach that, has to earn that by living a certain way. And I don't know if it's, you know, it's not directly related to how much you donate to the church, I'm sure, but you know, that never hurts from what I hear. And then beyond that, it's sort of like I was getting scared going, wow, well, I've done a few unnice things in my life, and there's some people that, you know, geez, they've tried to go for the Guinness Book of a World Record for meanness. Now, you know, what about for them? Are they going to end up having this nice place?
Well, you know, that's a big question. That's, you know, still out there and kind of bantered about and wondered about. You know, Danion Brinkley has told his story about how he certainly was one of the mean guys, you know, having been working for the CIA and actually an assassin. So he certainly was not a good guy. And when he had his near-death experience going down the tunnel, meeting at the other end of the tunnel, love and light and not at all anything that would resemble the fire and brimstone of hell, and which
what some people call the cosmic spanking.
Yeah, right. So you know, his experience certainly defied what many people might think could happen when they arrive at the other side. Now, there are others too, though, that have had different experiences of the near-death experience, and from what I understand, it really does come a lot from a place of belief. If one believes that they need to be punished, then they may very well be punished, or if their belief system offers that to them, then that you know, may be where they can experience their life after moving and being released from their body. However, there's always choice, and one can always call out and reach out and ask for love and light, and upon just asking for that, it can come to them.
Okay, so to me, as you were saying that, there's that, I don't know if I'm talking about the right thing when I say last rites, where in the, I believe, Roman Catholic faith, and I'm not an expert on this, so if we have a listener listening in that can correct us, if I'm off base here, that would be fine, that someone that has had a very terrible life could receive last rites in their faith and devote their, you know, connect to Jesus the Christ, and through that union be forgiven and released of their sins through the atoning sacrifice of Jesus the Christ, and then go ascend into the next existence without having to go through whatever would be called gates of hell, torture, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
Watching only TV with commercials and no actual programs, that would be terrible.
Yeah.
That joke, sorry.
No more TV. Yeah, no, you know, that, you know, I don't have a strong understanding of the Catholic religion myself either, but, you know, I there's a strong belief system there that, you know, through that prayer work that, you know, the person will be able to, you know, go into the light. And, you know, we're speaking about a situation where it's, you know, difficult to really, how do we really know for sure what's absolutely going to happen? From my understanding, from my experience and knowledge that I have, I from what I see, it comes from the belief system, whatever that is that person is holding, and where they believe that they are at the time of their passing.
Okay. So, and if nothing else, a big focus of what you're doing, separate from, and I know you get into some, address some of this in your work about how to deal with people that may have different belief systems than ours and still be compassionate with them at their time of passing, is it's just so wonderful to know that we can have a way to be more tender about this, because last we heard, everyone's going to go through this experience at some point.
Right. And I think that's really an important point, is that we are all going to go through this experience. And I think so many times what happens is that, at least it happened for me, and I believe it has happened for many other people, is this idea that I don't need to think about this. This isn't going to happen to me for quite some time. Or maybe some kind of hope that maybe it's never really going to happen, when it really will. So it's a facing of the truth of our lives. And then the facing or the turning in toward this understanding of life and death, we can also start to see what kinds of limitations we might be putting on ourselves in reaching our potential in life.
Wow. So there it ties back into actually the quality of life by addressing this fact that we're here. We've stepped into a journey. There's a time limit on the journey. It's just like we get on a train and we're going from wherever, Denver to St. Louis. Well, we got on the train. We entered that experience. We get to St. Louis. We're getting off the train.
Yeah.
Well, we came in here. We're now in a body. This is fascinating. I'm kind of wondering where some of this all began for you, and because now you first think that you were going to make death and dying your spiritual path.
Yeah, and as I had mentioned a little earlier, I had said that, you know, I was trying to put death out of my own mind. You know, I didn't want to think about it happening to me. It all began for me when I was about 5 years old, and I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would wonder what was going to happen to me when I died. And I was pretty scared. I'd run down the hallway and wake up my parents and talk to my mom and say, "Mom, what's going to happen to me when I die?" And she would basically wonder why I was so concerned about my own dying. She had said when she was my age, she was more worried about her parents. So she didn't really offer me a lot of comfort other than to wonder, "Lynn, what are you so concerned about? This isn't going to happen to you for a very long time." And she'd send me back to bed, and I'd still be lying there really wondering, what's going to happen to me, my identity, when I die? And leave the light on in my bedroom and hopefully, you know, go to sleep and hopefully think that the darkness wouldn't be what I would experience when I die. So that was a pretty big experience at 5 years old that I managed
Talk about a unique 5-year-old. I haven't heard them doing any of this on Sesame Street.
Yeah. I had mentioned this to someone else not so long ago, and they said, yeah, I don't think too many 5-year-olds have this kind of existential, wonderings. And, I think that really was the first step of putting me on this path of having an interest in trying to have a better understanding of dying in life. And I did put this fear of mine aside for many years. And then when I was about 30 years old, I was back in college working on my BA in psychology, and out of the blue there comes back this big, huge fear of what's going to happen to me when I die. And I looked at the class schedules and saw that there was a class on death and dying, and I thought, I'm going to take that class and see if I can face my fear. And I took that class, and it did help, and I got introduced to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and that was my first glimmerings of thinking about becoming a hospice volunteer.
Mm.
Yeah. Her discussions about how often family and friends stand in so much fear when being with their loved one that, you know, this translates to the loved one that they're very alone and isolated. And I thought, you know, for me, when I die, I certainly don't want to feel alone and isolated. I want somebody to be there with me.
Mm-hmm.
So that really, she really inspired me to think about going to that person who's lying there, and going up and holding their hand and being with them.
Yeah. That's beautiful. So that, a couple of really strong experiences, and very much tying into our culture. How did you end up connecting? We'd mentioned earlier this fellow, Danyon Brinkley.
Yeah. that was, I think, a very synchronistic event. It was definitely on my path toward death and dying and making this my spiritual path. Just 6 months prior to January of 1998, my dear aunt at the time had said, had invited me and my mother and my sister to go on a inner voyage cruise in the Caribbean. Mm. And on that cruise was going to be Danyon Brinkley and other speakers and authors such as Larry Dossey and Raymond Moody and Joan Barasinko. So it was a floating spiritual convention.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's big.
And she was, my aunt was well-to-do, so she was willing to pay, and I had never been on a cruise before, so I certainly wasn't going to turn that down. But she had known that I wanted to meet Danyon because I had first heard about him, or I first learned about him several years prior when I saw him on the Danyon Brinkley, on the Oprah Winfrey Show with several other speakers. He was, and it was just an unforgettable moment for me. I hardly ever watch TV, and for some reason this particular day I thought, I'm going to turn on the TV, and turned it on, and there's the Oprah Winfrey Show, and for the first time in my life, I see Danyon Brinkley on stage, and he's on the far left-hand side of this panel of speakers, and there he is, being Mr. Animated that he is. He was stomping his feet up and down on the stage while sitting in his chair and just shouting out, you know, we are all powerful spiritual beings. And I could really see that he totally meant what he was saying, and I thought, man, I really need to meet this guy. I gotta know what he's talking about. Yeah. So then I read his book, Saved by the Light, and then his second book, At Peace in the Light, and both of them really helped also with bringing some pieces together for me around the issues of death and dying. His Saved by the Light book was all about his personal journey of his near-death experience.
Yeah. And for me, one from my childhood that would have been a great title for a book would have been Please Leave On the Light.
Yeah.
I digress.
Well, that's certainly what I wanted to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh.
And
so there you were, you know, connecting with him on the cruise.
Yeah, there I was connecting with him on the cruise, and it was amazing. Out of thousands of people, I managed to have a personal meeting with Danyon on that cruise, and in that meeting, I really believe that somehow he sparked this spiritual experience that I had several days later after meeting him on that cruise. Something within him, he's a battery of electrical energy, I guess, ever since he got hit with that lightning. He's just walking around like a lightning bolt. I don't know.
Yeah, so if any of you at home haven't experienced that, you can just unscrew a light bulb and definitely don't do that at home. But
yeah.
Yes, he was, you know, definitely, you know, a near-death experience from being electrocuted through a lightning strike, and then came back.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he actually did come back from that, you know, even after he had been clinically diagnosed as, you know, dead. And so he is one of those amazing near-death experiencers with quite an awesome story to share. And one of the, a couple of different things, statements that he made while he was on that cruise really stood out to me and stuck with me. One was that we're already as dead as we're ever going to get. And, you know, I was pretty kind of stumped with that when I first heard that. But
yes.
then I really got the impression that I need to meditate on this. I need to and really understand what that means. And after having that spiritual experience, I totally got what he meant by that. That, you know, we can never be any more dead than what we are, because we never really die.
And we being not our physical body.
Right. We being our spiritual essence of who we truly, truly are.
Hmm. Ah, okay.
Yeah.
So that's the ongoing part. That's the part that not just takes the train ride from Denver to St. Louis, so to speak, or from our physical earth plane or birth to death experience, but it was somewhere before it got here. It's going somewhere after we leave here.
Right.
My
right.
goodness.
Right.
How do you
yeah.
keep track of that kind of thing?
Well, one way to do that is to meditate, actually. Yeah. Meditation is a key that unlocks the door to the mystery. It really does.
Mm. Wow. Now, you've had, you know, some experiences that are pretty profound. So, you know, here you are connecting with Danyon, and I guess then what happened after you kind of had this awakening for your spiritual path?
I through that experience, and then a couple of days later, my Kundalini was released. Through that particular Kundalini releasing experience, I came to know that without a doubt, my spiritual path was to help others reduce their fear around the issues of death and dying. And I ended up saying, well, what's my first step to do that? And Danyon Brinkley had just started up a nonprofit, the Twilight Brigade, and I ended up signing up for hospice volunteer training. And I attended the training in May of 1998 in San Francisco, and I was living in Sacramento, California at the time, and I returned back home to California and thought, wow, I think I'm probably one of the few out here in Sacramento that have received this awesome training. And,
Wow.
I found out there were a couple of others that had besides myself. And what I ended up doing is a couple of things. I joined that Sacramento Hospice Consortium, which is a banding together of the different hospitals in the area that provides hospice volunteers throughout the area. So I joined their organization and immediately started working at the bedside with my first patient, who was a World War II veteran. And at the same time, I started working on getting a chapter of the Twilight Brigade going in Sacramento. So I was on the road, really working on it.
Ah, yay. Well, and I know you mentioned in your book, Sweet Reverence, about getting a chapter of Twilight Brigade started in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a maiden voyage for you.
Yeah, that was a maiden voyage for me. It definitely was. And it was also, I have to say, amazing how many people came together that were very interested in the community to take the training, and that we started actually offering through the Sacramento chapter And we trained hundreds of people. So it's a really excellent training, and people came out of that training and still too to this day saying, you know, it's life changing.
Wow. So and they're saying that not just about hospice stuff, but separate from that, just there's the content in the training that is tremendous, is whether someone has a great interest in hospice or not.
Absolutely. I encourage people to take this training, or that it has the elements in it that part of what I had talked about earlier, which I think is really important, and that is taking a look at our individual issues around death and dying. In other words, a turning in toward taking a look at these issues rather than running away and hiding. It's a matter of facing this. And by facing this, then we can actually release a lot of fear in our life. And so, you know, again, this is turning around to living.
Mm.
You know, living to our highest potential. Seeing those fears that stop us from, you know, what's holding us back from becoming. You know, death has a lot to do with holding people back, fears of, you know, what they can live to in their potential.
Ah, okay. So it's a matter of, instead of dwelling upon the fears about what's going to happen in the next life and having that plaguing us, not necessarily every moment consciously, but somewhere in the back of our mind. Oh, I can't face it. I can't face it. I know it's there, but I'm afraid. I'm afraid. I'm afraid. Okay, never mind. I won't think about it. To the idea, wait a minute, I can get past this and get busy living.
Right. It's that. And then there's this, of course, the other really important aspect to the training, and that is by getting to this place of facing our own issues around death and dying, then we can be a much more compassionate presence for those that are dying. So we free ourselves from that fear so that we can be compassionate.
Okay. And and when I'm hearing that, initially the thought in my mind kind of flashes on, well, someone is, you know, at their deathbed or they're very ill, when you say we can be more compassionate for the dying. And then that scene kind of shifted back away from the bed and the person, and realizing, well, you know, the people sitting around them, a person that is kind of going to be passing on in whatever, a few days, few hours, those people are going to be heading out too. So being more compassionate to the dying means being compassionate to all of our brothers and sisters here on planet Earth.
Oh, absolutely, right.
You snuck one in on us, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. It's a powerful way of bringing compassion into all aspects of the life, yeah.
Oh, now I want to make sure, you know, if we take this training, are we more likely to be hanging out in graveyards or cemeteries?
When Halloween comes around, I guess. No,
not any more than we already are.
No, not any. No, not any. No.
I didn't think so.
What it does is it really opens the door to our hearts, to compassion, to bringing in love and light into our own lives and into the lives of others.
Mm. Wow.
And that's just another one.
No wonder you call this book Sweet Reverence.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to point out. That's a lot to do with the title Sweet Reverence.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And now, and once again, that is a wonderful book that currently is available, you said, through Amazon, or what was the other source?
ETC Publishing.
Like Edward Tomcat, ETC?
That's correct.
ETC, like the initials Edward Tomcat, etcpublishing.com?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay. And, of course, I can still make remembrance, because you're going to be talking about this thing called a reverence breath, which is the way we can reference your website, www.reverencebreath.com.
That's right.
You're tying this all together for us. What a package.
Right.
Yeah. Someone's been up at night doing their homework.
No, I wonder who that would be.
Well, now we brought up the topic of this reverence breath. I know I'm curious.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yes, I certainly can. You know, I just want to talk a little bit about Danyon Brinkley's Infinity Breath. I had one of the reasons that I first wanted to meet Danyon was in his second book. He talked about his second book. I want to give the title. It's called That Peace in the Light. In that particular book, he brought in the idea of the infinity breath, and he has a particular technique in the way that he does this. But the bottom line is that the infinity breath and the reverence breath do the same type of thing, and that is it does a psychic type of esoteric connection with the person that is practicing the breath to the person that is dying, so that that the person who's dying will actually feel this connection and won't feel so isolated and alone. They will feel together with someone, and it helps to alleviate fear. And the reason that part of the reason that it alleviates the fear, at least what the reverence breath does, is it really brings in. And Danyon's breath does this too, but the reverence breath really focuses on bringing in this compassionate, loving light through the breath to the dying person, and so that they can actually feel the presence of remembering who they are in their spiritual essence.
Boy, not a moment too soon.
Right.
To bring some peace before someone makes their transition.
Yeah. This offers that peaceful way for the person who's dying to know whether that they are returning back to the place that is the true home.
Okay, and helps them to be able to feel okay about releasing the body. It's sort of like it with a child, maybe holding on to a toy, but if you offer them something even more interesting, they'll let go of the one thing to grab onto something even more interesting.
Right.
And of course, I think some of your work is going to help us to learn how to be able to let go of the illusion that our body in this earth is the only experience we'll ever have, and to grab on to, well, we hate to call it, you know, I don't know if God's going to like it when I call his kingdom a toy. that reach out for that God toy there.
Yeah.
But that's a wonderful thing that this reverence breath helps to facilitate.
It absolutely does, and sweet reverence brings the reader into that experience where I'm actually working in the second part of the book where I'm with a dear friend of mine who is dying, and we are doing the reverence breath, and so the reader actually can see and witness what I witnessed through that experience. So.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah.
Because very few people have been able to do that. And so this is an amazing thing that they can do with your book. And of course, I'm not sure when the movie's going to come out, but, it's first we got a book.
That's right.
And speaking of this training, I'm just curious how people that would be interested. Is there a way besides psychically knowing when it's being offered?
Yeah, right. Well, I'm actually got a Twilight Brigade training coming up in June in the Denver metro area, coming up June 20th through the 22nd. And so if any listeners are out there would like to attend, please do get in contact with me, and the best way to do that is to probably to email me or...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and what would be a good email to email you at?
Okay, that would be Lynn, that's L-Y-N, underscore, Valverde, my last name, so that's Lynn underscore V as in Victor, A-L, another V as in Victor, E-R, D as in David, E, at yahoo.com.
Okay, fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, so that we can be in on the know on that, and this incredible training, I suppose, is, what, about $5,000?
This training is the deal of the century. It is a life-altering, transforming training offered at a contribution of only $50 for the entire weekend. So this is the deal of the century.
Ah, so because this is part of the nonprofit 501(c)(3), is that correct?
Right. That's correct.
So
yeah.
If someone said, look, this is $5,000 is not enough to contribute to your cause, and they wanted more, then whatever they do would be tax deductible for them?
That's right, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Good. Well, this is important information.
Yeah.
So
our mission is to educate people on these issues, and we're here to do that. So.
Mm, that's wonderful. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it is wonderful. I have to say that it is.
Now, I'm just wondering here a little bit about, you know, we've talked about compassion
mm-hmm.
a lot, and I guess people might have different definitions of it. Could you help us a little bit with what you would define as compassion?
Yeah, I define compassion as suffering with. And that's a fairly common understanding of the word in the Buddhist circles, and I probably in the various religious philosophies as well. And it's the ability of the person who is being present with a dying person to stay with them in their suffering. Through the reverence breath, the person, the witnesser, the compassionate person, sits in compassion at the same time while they're connecting with the dying person esoterically while doing this reverence breath. So it's this essence of actually suffering with, and it may sound like it's like the person who's actually doing the reverence breath might be suffering, but they're not at all. It's a place in that you find in your heart that opens to this place of being with at a place of deep love.
Yeah, okay, because I don't know about other people, but when I hear someone mention several times suffering, somehow that brings to the thought process things that don't rank high on the pleasure scale.
Right.
And so it's just kind of wonderful for you to help clarify that that you know, in compassion, that I guess I don't even know if it would be accurate to say, you know, communing with rather than suffering with.
I like that.
Being present with.
Yeah, I really like that. It is a connection, and communion is connection. So it's a way of being able to be with that person and right exactly where they're at. Yeah.
Okay, and yet when they go, you don't have to go with them.
No.
Okay.
Now, although I will say that through the reverence breath, one is very connected with the person, and there is like a sense of oneness going on between the two. So, but it is also a sense of deep love, and again, that sweet reverence has so much to do with that. It's a sweet, blissful feeling. I like to think of it almost like, you know, maple syrup, yummy, yummy taste. in awe at the same time, bringing in this loving, compassionate light to the dying person.
Ah, okay. And I'm just curious, I haven't taken the training yet. Is there a part of the training that helps us to, if we've had a perspective of death being this final thing, is there any support in the training for people that would want to kind of shift some of that belief or to something that may be more expansive or more freeing to their process of being in this life?
Yeah, the entire process of the training is, a lot of the training is experiential, where we bring in different elements of exercises so that each person has the opportunity to have a personal awareness and expansion. So absolutely, there is the opportunity for that to occur.
Okay. Now, and there are no animal or human sacrifices during the training, are there?
Not last I checked.
Okay. Good. I just wanted to clear that up. You know, someone's out there going, okay, we're going to get real close to all this. And in the old days, but no, we're not doing it that way anymore.
No, not this time.
Let go of that need for the animal or human sacrifices to connect to death and dying. and to living. Well, this is important. we're making light of it, but it wasn't a joke at different times, or
mm-hmm.
there's probably still places that it isn't.
Right.
But we're connecting to the importance of this ongoing life through this training, and through your work, and through the book Sweet Reverence. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yahoo. Yeah. Now, we're kind of getting here into the last few minutes, and I wanted to check in with you, Lynn, if there's anything in particular that, you know, you wanted to be sharing with people as we kind of begin to wrap up here.
I do want to say that a little bit more about Sweet Reverence, and that I wrote the book in story format. I had felt that the issue, you know, the whole subject of death and dying is not exactly what a lot of people would turn to at their bookstore to be the first book to pull off the shelf. So I thought, well, what can I do? How can I make reading about this subject more interesting? So I put it in story format, and it is my story, a true story, which I almost think is practically unbelievable, but it is true. And I put it into two different parts. The first part is about my spiritual experience, my spiritual awakening, what got me on the path to doing this work. And then the second part of the book is about taking my spiritual experience and all of my wonderings about my awakening and reverence breath and applying it to a very dear friend of mine who was dying, and my soul sister had asked me to be with her while her father was dying from pancreatic cancer. And I agreed absolutely to be with her. And so the second part of the book is the 3 days that she and I spent in the hospital with her father as he was dying. So I take also my experience as a national trainer for the Twilight Brigade, so the skills of, you know, the do's and don'ts at the bedside, and my spiritual aspect of the reverence breath, and I bring that to the bedside so that the reader can actually get the feeling as if they are in the room right there, so that they get the idea of what it's really like to be with someone who's dying.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. I just want to recommend to all my listeners out there to get this book and to consider that training coming up in June, and to, of course, email Lynn lyn_Valverde, VALVERDE at yahoo.com for more details about this. And keep your eyes on the website reverencebreath.com, as that'll have a lot more information, and that will be up soon. This is fabulous. I want to thank you, Lynn, for taking time out of your busy schedule to share so much with our listeners today. It's a blessing to all of us, and just wish you many, many blessings and good fortune as you help us to be more comfortable about the process of dying, so that we can get busy living and celebrate each day with more passion and joy.
Mm. Thank you, Kenneth, for being on your show and for your beautiful energy and for the voice that you put out for many. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. And to you, Lynn, and beloved listeners, blessings, God's love upon you, and a wonderful week ahead. And we'll tune in again next week.